Lane Bench. There's all kinds of excitement going on there.
Scores! Roll the highlight reel. 6-0 Flames.
You can put it in the wind column.
Yeah, baby! Yeah, baby! Yeah, baby!
This is Flames Talk with Pat Steinberg and Wes Gilbertson on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
All right, we are underway. It is Tuesday, March 11th, and this hour of Flames Talk is underway with Wes Gilbertson of Post Media. My name is Pat Steinberg. Welcome to the Sports Drive brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Did you know that barrier-free access doors are required for commercial entrances and public washrooms? Are you compliant? Visit CalgaryLockandSafe.com. We're available on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts. Hopefully you're having a wonderful week thus far, including Wes Gilbertson. Hello, Wes.
Hey, buddy.
Calgary stretch drive. Has it started? Yeah, you could probably make that argument, but I think the stretch run really begins on Wednesday night, because right now the Flames are enjoying 3 days without a game. They played Saturday and won that game 1-0 over Montreal. Since that point, no games on Sunday, Monday, or here on this Tuesday. So a 3-day span without a game, a span unlike they will have the rest of the season unless they make the playoffs. For the rest of the regular season, they've got one more gap of 2 days between games, just once. The rest of the way, it's every other day with a few back-to-backs sprinkled in there as well. So my demarcation, Wes, is the stretch drive begins on Wednesday night, and the sprint to the finish of 19 games is going to be an absolute grind. And as such, we wanted to ask on the text line at 960-960, and wanted you and I to dive into this question. What has to happen between now and the end of the regular season to make this stretch drive a successful one in your eyes, in Wes's eyes, in my eyes, or in your eyes on the text line? Get your thoughts in at 960-960. What do you want to see in this final sprint? What will make it a success for you? What will make you happy with this final 19-game stretch? That's what we're asking. That's what we're diving into for the next little while here on Flames Talk. So why don't you start, Wes? How would you answer that question from a Flames standpoint?
Well, I just want to maybe start with what I won't completely base it on, and that's the end result. I do understand that some are going to say if the Calgary Flames decided not to sell on deadline day, if they didn't take advantage of the opportunity to maybe flip a couple of assets for futures, then it's got to be playoffs or bust. The only way to justify that decision made last Friday and in the lead up to it is to make the postseason. And I got to be honest with you, I think this stretch drive can be viewed as a success without a playoff spot. Certainly a playoff spot is what would have to be the ultimate, but I think it's all about the young players still for me. It's about how Dustin Wolf looks in these crucial games. And quite frankly, I'm sitting here saying it's not playoffs or bust, but if Dustin Wolf plays as well in crunch time games as he's been playing in almost crunch time games, they're going to have a really darn good shot of earning a playoff spot, right? But we know that already. But it's beyond that for me. It's Zeri, it's Coronado. Like the most encouraging sign for me in the stretch, whether it means they finish eighth or they finish ninth, would be that you sort of find out some of your young players, I'll include Kevin Ball and others in that, have what it takes to be contributors in those big games. I think if those guys are up to the challenge of what the next 5 or 6 weeks is going to be, mm-hmm. If I was in Craig Conroy's desk, could be encouraged by that enough to go, okay, you know what, eighth, ninth, not that it doesn't matter, but I think you know what I'm getting at.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm kind of in a very similar boat to you, Wes, in that I look at this and I say to myself, the most important thing for me and the thing that will encourage me the most, or which will what will consider it a success in my eyes, is whether or not they're playing meaningful games here between now and the end of the regular season. If the vast majority, like 17, 18, 19 of their remaining 19, are meaningful, important, big games. And some of these players, from Dustin Wolf to Matt Coronado, you mentioned Kevin Ball, that's a great example, Connor Zary, so on and so forth. If these players get the opportunity to play in more big games like Wednesday nights, you know, Wednesday is going to be a big game. Maybe that final game on April 17th in Los Angeles, the makeup game, maybe that is a huge game for the Flames. Maybe that decides, maybe they need a point to make the playoffs or something like that. Or, you know, they've got remaining games with some of the other teams in the mix. Being in big games down the stretch with your playoff lives hanging in the balance, I think does wonders. I even think watching, like if you're Connor Zary or if you're Matt Coronado and you're watching Blake Coleman or Nazem Kadri, Stanley Cup winners, get ready for these games and prepare themselves physically and mentally at this stage of the season for huge games like that. That to me, like if they can, if this can be a group that is in the mix and competitive and fighting for something with meaningful games the rest of the way, then that to me, even if they miss the playoffs, is important. And I will consider it an important stretch. Obviously, making the playoffs for everybody is the ideal. It's for a show called Flames Talk. You know, just it may stand to reason that listeners, ears, downloads going to be higher on a team that makes the playoffs than doesn't. And it's good for the radio station. It's good for our podcast family. It's good for the Flames. It's good for Sportsnet. You know, it's good for content. It's fun. The city's buzzing. Obviously, the playoffs would be awesome. But I think from a development standpoint and a big picture standpoint, especially because we don't really believe the Flames are going to be finishing bottom 10, while not completely out of the question, nothing through 63 games leads me to believe they're going to slide back so dramatically that they'll be in a bottom 10 spot at the end of the year. I think being in this situation, going full on to the end of the season in important games in the midst of a tooth and nail playoff fight and learning what it takes to win in a playoff fight at this stage of the season, I think could do just immeasurable good for a lot of the young players on this team.
I really like the way you laid that out, buddy, and I couldn't agree with you more. So I'm just going to add another point that I jotted down that I think layers on top of this. One of the priorities that I would have in this playoff chase is not to let that chase override some of the development goals. And I think that would be an easy thing to do at this time of year. And so I'm not saying bring kids up from the farm and start putting them in the lineup over guys who have proven through 63 games that they should be there. I'm not saying you got to take Joel Hanley out of the lineup tomorrow for Ilya Solovyov or anything like that. But what I am saying is I'd still like to see the Flames make development a priority down the stretch. And that means if you have an injury on the blue line, I don't need to see Tyson Barry again. Great pro, great career up to this point. It hasn't worked here in Calgary, and I don't need to see him again just because he's played 900 games. I hope that the Flames would prioritize, if they need a defenseman, a guy like Kuznetsov or Solovyov, because I believe that that's what's still best for the future, and I believe it can also be what's best for right now.
Yep.
I think the same would apply, you know, like great guy. I always enjoy chatting with him when he was in the Flames locker room. I don't need to see Clark Bishop again this season if they need a forward, right? We've seen it. He had an opportunity. I'd like to see that spot go to a young guy. You know, I don't think that there's a huge difference between Clark Bishop and Sam Morton. And if you need a center, I'd like to see Sam Morton. And so I'm not saying abandon the playoff chase to make this about test driving young guys. I realize that's what you do when you're not in a playoff chase. But what I am saying is that I don't want the playoff chase to be so important that you look and say, well, it's got to be Tyson Barrie. It couldn't be Kuznetsov because he's only played one game. I really hope, excuse me, I really hope the Flames don't make that mistake if they need a guy.
The last one I'll add before we hit the text line, because lots of great responses on the text line at 960-960 on what you want to see, what you need to see to make you happy down the stretch from this Flames group. I want to see, it's kind of an extension of what I've already said, but I want to see Dustin Wolf in some of these crucial games. Like, he's going to start against Vancouver on Wednesday. He got the shutout on Saturday. I think it's a pretty fait accompli that Dustin's going to go against the Canucks on Wednesday. That's a huge game. That's a massive spot. That's a four-pointer. That's the last chance you've got to do your own damage to Vancouver's playoff hopes. I want to see Dustin Wolf in a spot like that where there's going to be a buzz in the building and there's going to be two desperate teams and it's going to have the air of a March playoff game as close as you can get in the regular season. I want to see Dustin Wolf in that spot. I'm really excited to see him in those spots.
And you know what? If it doesn't go well, I want to see him again in the next game or the game after that too. Like this is what I mean about not prioritizing the
right.
Over development. Right? This isn't about gifting opportunities to the young guys, but the young guys who have helped you get this far, like Dustin Wolf, if he has a turd against the Vancouver Canucks tomorrow, you still need him to be your guy down the stretch. And I have no doubt that that's how the Calgary Flames will approach it.
So if you take a look at what's remaining on the schedule that you would put in kind of the big game category, Vancouver, obviously, Colorado, you've got twice. I don't think the Flames are tracking down the Avalanche, but they're in the playoff mix there too. You've got the Avalanche. You've got a game in Edmonton at the end of the month. You've got a game in Utah still to go. Two against Vegas in your building. Minnesota is stumbling right now. They're scuffling a bit. There's an opportunity for you to maybe move closer in a wild card conversation. Like games like that, that's when I want to see Dustin Wolf in there. Yeah. And you got that final game, which may or may not mean anything against on April 17th against the Kings.
And I'd only add one, and that's the Toronto game, just because of the circus that is a visit.
That's on Monday.
To Toronto anyways. That one also fits the bill for me.
Let's get to the text line at 960-960. Start with John in Mackenzietown, who says, my expectations of the Flames between now and the end of the season is the same as it has been all year. Just be competitive. It's worked out well so far, and if they get in, great. If not, it's been a great learning season, and in the offseason, management will make them better and set them up for next year. That comes from John in Mackenzietown. That's kind of where I am in terms of where we all are in this conversation. Dale says, Flames need to go .500 through them. Their last 10 games of March and win 6 of 9 in April, and they'll not only be in, but they'll be in with momentum, and that could be very, very clear. Very, very true, rather. This reads, Flames now need to make the playoffs for the season to be a success. Giving Montreal pick 10-16 is a worst-case scenario. And I get that. Like, all of a sudden, you miss by 2 points, and your pick still transfers. You're not playing playoff hockey, and you transfer the better pick to the Habs. Yeah, I can see why that would be frustrating if you're a Flames fan. That would be, I think, worst case scenario.
I see why that's out there, absolutely. I don't think, and this is part of the discussion I know we're having, I don't think it's playoffs or bust. I don't think that ninth is a abject failure, although I see where that texture is coming from. I think it helps that, you know, that New Jersey pick isn't going to be too far off. Like, you're still going to have some draft capital, but I'm not dismissing that opinion in the least. Yeah. I understand where that text is coming from.
Kevin and Carstairs, what I'd like to see through the last bit here from the Flames is high compete. I want where the other teams are frustrated to play against them, where they don't feel it's an easy win. Of course, I want to see some wins, but as long as I can see the team competing and making it hard on the opposition, I think it'll boost their confidence of playing that style should they make the playoffs. And that's the other thing. Like, if they end up making the playoffs, based on the way this year is gone, the Flames will be like, you know, just based on how much runway is left, 29th, 30th, 31st, 32nd in goals for. They're going to get in because they're stingy, because they've got great goaltending, because they've played in a lot of close in the balance games. And I am curious to see how that suits them come the playoffs. Like, again, I'm not suggesting this is going to happen or that they're going to upset the Winnipeg Jets or anything like that. But teams like Calgary have given higher-seeded teams absolute nightmares over the last 10 years in the playoffs. Teams that block a ton of shots, who are comfortable defending a lot, who are comfortable, you know, being in stretches where, yeah, it's their goalie and a bunch of block shots and a lot of keeping teams to the outside, even if they don't have the puck a lot. The New York Islanders made two straight Eastern Conference Finals under Barry Trotz by playing like that. I'm not suggesting it's ideal, and I'm not suggesting it is the modern way to win the Stanley Cup, because it's not. But for this group this year, yeah, could they give the Jets an absolute handful playing that way and executing that way in round one? I think there's that potential. Not going to, again, the Jets are a hell of a hockey team, and everybody would choose them in a first-round series against the Flames. But I just think Calgary could be the type of team that gives them absolute fits because they've got the goaltender and they've got the comfort level in games that, you know, maybe they're outmatched in skill-wise, talent-wise, but
sure,
will-wise, work-wise, and their ability to defend and box out, that can win you 4 out of 7 games here and there.
And don't get us wrong, whatever. If we're talking about the Calgary Flames in a first-round playoff series, the vast majority, despite having, you know, to get to this point, having shocked a lot of people, the vast majority will be picking them to lose in 5 games or less, right? Like, if this
gets
in and faces a top seed, they are going to be a heavy, heavy underdog. And understandably so, they're going to get in with close to historically low for a playoff team goal totals, right? Like, we're talking about a team that just struggles to produce offense, and that's going to make it tough to win playoff games. But for all the reasons you just outlined, they're not going to be a lot of fun to play either.
This reads from Dale. There's no other way to assess it. If they make the playoffs, even if they lose in 4, so be it, good on them. But if this team misses the playoffs and hands over that pick, so help me, I'm going to be pissed. I may have edited the text there for radio. But again, very similar to a prior text. This from Zeke. Making the playoffs and getting pick number 11 from New Jersey would be the best case scenario, but realistically, just making the playoffs is what's most important. And again, you know, the New Jersey situation, depending on how they go down the stretch,
yeah,
no Jack Hughes for the rest of the year, that's going to really impact that first round pick the Flames will be getting in the Jacob Markstrom trade. And it is top 10 protected. So that's why Zeke mentioned pick number 11, so that's the highest possible 2025 pick the Flames could get from New Jersey.
But let's say you give up the 15 or 16 pick. Does it soften the blow a little bit if you're getting the 18 from New Jersey?
Might. Yep. It might.
I mean, you're swimming in the same pond there. Now,
I am interested to see like what the offset is between Calgary and Florida too at the end of the year. I mean, Florida is the other pick that'll transfer to Montreal, depending on where the Flames go. Now, right now, the Panthers are sitting on top of the Atlantic Division, mm-hmm, and
fourth
currently
overall.
Fourth overall. But no Ekblad and no Tkachuk for the rest of the year until the postseason. Ekblad's been suspended for 20 games, and Tkachuk we're not expecting back until the postseason. Are the Panthers, you know, a little bit further down the list? Do they go 500 the rest of the way as the defending Stanley Cup champs, get their guys back in the playoffs, and that's when it really matters? And what's the offset between where those picks end up being? That's going to be really interesting, too.
Yeah, and I understand the lingering frustration about sending a pick to Montreal. I think it feels like a formality to me now. Like that,
I don't think they're going to finish bottom 10. It's not out of the question, but I would say it's unlikely.
I mean, we talk about how hard it is to climb over 8 teams into a playoff spot. It's pretty hard to also slide over that number of teams to get into the bottom 10. I know the point totals aren't totally crazy in terms of...
It's a four-point offset right now.
Yeah. So I can't really see a scenario other than this Flames team, just based on everything we've seen through 63 games, being right in the thick of it until game 80 or 81 or 82 or beyond.
Kerry says, the most important thing I'd like to see is the Flames playing meaningful hockey down the stretch to allow Wolf, Zeri, Coronado to gain experience in those critical situations. I'd like to see Wolf warrant a Calder nomination, and most importantly, I'm fine with the Flames missing. They are above expectations already, but I do hope they contribute to the one Canadian team in the Canucks missing the playoffs. Screw those guys, except DeBrusque. Big Jake DeBrusque fan.
Calgary resident.
New Calgary resident. This reads, you know what, guys? No matter what happens this year, playoffs, no playoffs, bottom of the league in offense, etc., this year has been fun. Lots of character, lots of try. I can cheer for that. Nothing ticked me off more than in past years when the effort was half-assed. Lamborghini for mayor, and you guys are a big part of what makes it fun. We hope so. Thank you. That's from Ray. Chad says, Dustin Wolf winning the Calder. That's it. Keep building for a bright future and a new rink, and the kid being the very centerpiece and on his way to a top five goaltending career. That's what I'd like to see out of this year. This says, I'm not team tank. I never will be, but it's good to know that if they are eliminated from the playoffs, the division is so tight they actually may slip further down before season's end. This says, while the development argument is nice to listen to, the truth is it means nothing if next year Zeri comes out and has 3 goals in the first 20 games. Same with Coronado, and Wolf has an .850 save percentage. 19 games can't decide all of that. But you also can't take away the importance of the value of playing in games of this magnitude down the stretch.
Yeah, no, you absolutely can't. And I thought you raised a really good point about just the value of seeing how, as you've picked this route, which is trying to sort of supplement your core on the fly, that's one of the appeals of going this way is, hey, look at all the examples we have sitting in the room before this game 81 is an absolute must win. We're facing elimination. Well, watch what Blake Coleman, who's won 2 cups, is doing. Watch what Nazem Kadri, who's won a Stanley Cup and played so many big games, is doing. Like that, I don't think can be overstated. I just think if those young guys were talking about Wolf and Coronado and Zeri and Kevin Ball, like if those guys perform well down the stretch, it really impacts maybe not the conversations management's having in the summer, but the conversations we're having, the conversations fans are having. Like the best case scenario is obviously playoffs, but part of the best case scenario is to see that your future building blocks are up to the task, to go into summer and say, man, think of how good Coronado was in those last 10 games. That really showed us something.
Rapid fire through some of these other ones, get to as many as we can. This says, playoffs, I'm already happy with the young player development so far. Moore's cool, but I need the playoffs to really be happy about this stretch. This says, from Alex and Connor in Belmont, Flames need to step up the offense to have a good shot at the playoffs. Patrick and Hanson Ranch would love to see the Flames jump over the Oilers in the standings. That would be fun. This from Bob. You know what, guys? I'm so impressed with what they've done to date that it doesn't matter to me if they get in or they don't. I'm just so impressed with their fight, and I think they all deserve a pat on the back regardless of the outcome. However, I really, really hope they make it in. Go Flames, go. That comes from Bob. This says from Brett, I think if they make the playoffs, then it's best. And if they don't, but give up their pick, then I don't see why everyone should be up in arms about it. That's Treliving's fault, and Connie has to deal with the mess that was left. This says, guys, not saying they do it, but I'm wondering if the Flames make the playoffs, could they call up Parekh? That comes from Grant. His season would have to be over in Saginaw for that to happen. But it would be, they'd have to be deep enough in for Saginaw's serious season to be completely over, but not saying it's completely out of the question. I just would say it's unlikely. Great stuff on the text line, 960-960. It's Pat and Wes on Flames Talk. Yes, sir.
That I think it's worth noting, like, Saginaw right now is sitting fourth in their conference. We're not talking about
a
total juggernaut like they were last year. So
they're probably going to make it to round two, but from there may not get further just based on the way the OHL is looking this year.
I think that's fair.
Pat and Wes with you. Can't find the latest episodes of your favorite HGTV, Discovery, and Food Network shows? Rogers Xfinity TV has the newest seasons of the top-rated shows on these popular channels, while other providers are no longer including them in their TV lineup. If your TV provider doesn't carry these channels, you're missing out on new seasons of Celebrity IOU, Hometown, Beat Bobby Flay, Expedition X, and more. Don't be fooled by other channels pretending to be these networks you know and love. Get the latest with Rogers Xfinity TV at Rogers.com.
This is Flames Talk. Join the conversation at 960-960. Sportsnet 960 The Fan.
It's Steinberg and Wes Gilbertson along with you on this Tuesday edition of Flames Talk. We're getting set for a massive showdown in the Pacific Division on Wednesday night. Final meeting between the Flames and Canucks this season. They will be separated by 1 point at most, one way or the other, going into Wednesday's game. The Canucks play Tuesday at home to Montreal, second half of the back-to-back Wednesday at the Scotiabank Saddle Dome. National television, Wednesday night hockey, and look, this is not going to decide the wild card race, but it's the last time either team has the opportunity to hurt the other's playoff chances. So this Canucks group, they're a point back of the Flames with even games played. What do we need to know about them? Always a pleasure to welcome in our next guest on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline from the Athletic and Sportsnet 650, our sister station in Vancouver. Our buddy Thomas Drantz joins us right now. Drantzer, always a pleasure, my friend. How are we doing?
Pat, thanks for having me. Doing well.
Okay, so in this market, the Flames have been a real fun story, and it's been cool to see them exceed expectations. But what give us the story in Vancouver, the narrative in Vancouver for a team that was a game away from the Western Conference Final last year and are now a point outside of the playoffs in the final quarter of the season?
Well, it couldn't be more different in some ways, and really stemming from opening night, right, where the Canucks look like they're cruising against the Flames, and Huska's group, as they've done so many times this season, sort of pull it out of the fire, right? Sort of outworked the Canucks throughout the evening. And, you know, one thing that I don't know is getting talked about enough outside of the Calgary market anyway is, you know, they peppered Artur Shelov's in exactly the right way, right? They made a game plan out of shooting from the point through layered traffic, sort of taking advantage of a young netminder's developmental struggle to adapt to seeing around NHL screeners. And that's what got the Flames back into the game. It was a dead-on perfect game plan. And I think that's been in evidence more nights than not throughout the season for Calgary, right, is that they are always prepared. In addition to the max effort thing, right, in addition to, you know, the Dustin Wolf storyline, which is a fantastic one, you know, I thought you saw that night. And, you know, in some ways, oftentimes the first game of the season tells you very little, right, about a team or about two teams.
Right.
But sometimes, and we've seen it in consecutive years in Vancouver, spoke volumes, right? The last year in Vancouver, you had the Canucks beat down the Edmonton Oilers like 7-3. And in some ways, that sort of foreshadowed both the Canucks' dream season and, you know, the painful end of the Jay Woodcroft era in Edmonton, right, which was a major storyline throughout the year. And this year, you know, Calgary sort of carried the momentum from that game one comeback victory. And, you know, with that sort of max effort and preparation, they've been phenomenal all year, punching well above their weight. And the Canucks have sagged. It's been a season marred by dysfunction and off-ice drama and trades that sort of changed the competitive trajectory of this franchise, frankly. And so when we're talking about this Canucks season, I mean, one thing to note is we're only like 11 games in to the post-JT Miller era of Canucks hockey. In a lot of ways, we're still learning about what exactly this team is. What their identity is, how they're going to win. And sort of one thing to watch for tomorrow, if you're a Calgary Flames fan, is this Canucks team plays pretty negative hockey. right? Like, they are a counter-punching team, especially in this new iteration, especially if they don't have Quinn Hughes in the lineup, which we'll see. So, you know, this is a team that's going to sit back. They're very capable defensively. They're an excellent defensive team. They're well-organized. I think Rick Tocchet's a phenomenal coach, and he's done a pretty good job with a pretty bad hand that he's been dealt pretty much repeatedly over the course of this year. But they are very much a pounce-on-your-mistake side as opposed to one that's really initiating. And I think that'll be in evidence tonight against a Montreal team that likes to attack off the rush.
Yeah.
And I think it'll be in evidence against the Calgary Flames, too, especially on the second leg of a back-to-back for the Canucks at the Saddle Dome on Wednesday.
So where are you? You said we'll see on Quinn Hughes. What do we know, Drancer, on the status of Quinn and on the status of Thatcher Demko?
Well, they're pretty confident reading between the lines and the fact that we haven't seen Demko skate with the group yet, that Demko's not going to be an option, at least for the first leg. Like, the Canucks have two back-to-backs this week, and the second leg of each back-to-back set is against Calgary first and then Utah second, with sort of Chicago and Montreal offering up appetizers. And that's difficult, obviously, because those are sort of the two most credible challengers, right, I think, to Vancouver's sort of bead on a wild card two spot in the Western Conference. Demko, I don't think, will be an option tomorrow in Calgary. Tocchet sort of intimating that he wants to see him get into multiple, maybe as many as three or four practices before he returns from this third extended absence this season. Been a very difficult injury-plagued season for Demko.
Yeah.
And so, you know, really one of the goaltending storylines for the Canucks is, can they play well enough defensively tonight? Can they limit how much traffic Lankinen has to work through in front of his net, how many shot attempts he faces, to preserve him, to be an option tomorrow? Of course, the Canucks are 1-6-1 in Artur Shelov's 8 starts this season. And we know, because we saw it, that Calgary knows exactly how to attack Shelov's, right? Like, that's not a situation I think the Canucks want to be in. And we do know Lankinen's going tonight in Montreal. So no Demko on Wednesday. Will we see Lankinen play back-to-back? I suspect we will. But some of that will be determined, presumably, based on what tonight looks like. As for Quinn Hughes, you know, the club canceled their practice on Monday with Rick Tocchet saying that if they'd practiced, Quinn Hughes would have been on the ice. Quinn Hughes was on the ice today for morning skate, albeit in a non-contact jersey. And, you know, Tocchet wouldn't confirm with the media, said the decision would be made after the skate as to whether or not Hughes would even travel to Calgary. But that leaves open the possibility that he might. And given that he would have practiced Monday and that today he had a twirl at least on the ice during morning skate, that suggests that he's at least an outside possibility to return to the Canucks lineup on Wednesday. And look, this guy is as competitive as they get. And, you know, he missed the Four Nations tournament in part because he wanted to be part of, he missed the Four Nations tournament because he was hurt. And he was hurt after the tournament, too. I think there's been complications with his recovery from what's reportedly an oblique injury, in part because of compensation injuries from him pushing to get back. But this is a guy who wants to play and wants to make the playoffs. And that's as high stakes, a 4-point swing game, as you get in the regular season. I can't imagine that he's not looking at, you know, his calendar and looking at the standings and being pretty thoughtful about wanting to play. And yet, you know, we know how important Quinn Hughes is to the Canucks, not just in terms of this stretch run and making the playoffs, but having a puncher's chance against a team like the Winnipeg Jets if the Canucks make it there. So we'll see exactly what it looks like, but I'm certainly not ruling out the possibility that Quinn Hughes might find a way to sneak into the lineup on Wednesday night in Calgary.
Okay. Interesting to watch for. We're chatting with Thomas Drance of The Athletic and Sportsnet 650 in Vancouver as we look ahead to Wednesday's game between the Flames and Canucks, a deeper look on this Vancouver team. It's Flames Talk with Pat Steinberg and Wes Gilbertson. Wes?
Thomas, we don't have time to ask you about all the Pettersons, so let me just zero in on one, the forward.
Yeah.
What? I just looked at the stat line again, and I still, like, I knew it wasn't going well, and then when you see 12 goals and 36 points, I still can't wrap my head around it. What is going on with Elias Pettersson?
Yeah, I wish I knew, there's not a lot of juice there. It's, you know, for most of the season anyway, the offensive production wasn't there and the speed and dynamic play wasn't there, but at least the defensive results were. And really, since the Four Nations break, that hasn't been the case. I mean, we're talking about a guy with a sub 40% shot attempt differential. The Canucks have been outscored 1-7 in his 5-on-5 minutes across the last 8 games, which should give you a sense of just how tough it's been for him. That, by the way, is also with a 950 on ice save percentage. So his defensive game has been a problem lately, and that's new. As for his overall struggles this season, I don't know. Like, we know that he dealt with knee tendonitis in the playoffs last year. We know that it inhibited his summer training. We know that the club wasn't pleased with his preparation and fitness level coming into this year. And we know that it snowballed from there as he struggled enormously, looking like a shadow of the elite player that he was when he was a 100-point center. I don't expect him to find that level again this season. You know, to be totally honest with you, gentlemen, I'm not expecting the Canucks to be able to count on Pettersson to give them a first-line impact down the stretch or into the playoffs this year. It looks to me, just given how little burst he has in terms of his speeding stride, given what the NHL edge data tells us about his shot, right? His shot velocity is way down off of his career norms, and all of his season highs occurred like basically in the first month of the year. So I do think there's a player. I do think you're watching a player who's somewhat physically inhibited by something, but I also think it's more than that. I think it's become confidence. And I just think it's sort of spiraled on him. And so that leaves the Canucks in a pretty precarious spot. I mean, since the Four Nations break, again, this 8-game stretch in which they've somehow managed to win 3 games, because it's not just Pettersson, with their top 6 centers on the ice. So with both Pettersson and Filip Hedl on the ice, we're talking about 212 minutes. Canucks have been outscored 2-12. That they've won 3 games, right? That this 8-game stretch, given how massively they're being outscored at the top end of their lineup, 5-on-5, that this 8 games hasn't completely sunk them is nothing short of a minor miracle, right? And there's reasons for it. The Canucks have got good goaltending. They've won some timely games, right? They've been clutch where it mattered. But they've managed to stay afloat through, you know, just this brutally anemic stretch of play from their top 6. And, you know, that gives them a puncher's chance. That makes this back-to-back set against Montreal and Calgary this week matter. But almost kind of by the skin of their teeth, right? If that doesn't change quick, if they can't get more from their top 6, not just in terms of raw offense, but in terms of outscores, or at least not getting obliterated on the scoreboard, they're going to be in a lot of trouble.
What's the flip side? And by that, I mean, like, when Canucks fans or Canucks management or whatever tell themselves, you know what, it's going to be all right. We're going to get in the playoffs. We're going to get that 8th seed. What's providing the optimism? Like, what's the biggest reason to believe that despite the dysfunction and all that's gone wrong, you know what, they're going to get in?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's the way that they play, right? They're like, as much as a lot of what I've talked about is tinged with pessimism, the last 4 games, which is only a 2-2 stretch, but includes, you know, a loss to the Dallas Stars in which they were right there, and a pretty unfortunate loss to the Seattle Kraken where the Kraken got 3 different goals off deflections. You know, at least across those 4 games anyway, the Canucks have seemed to round into something more resembling their usual form. They've been able to be dynamic attacking with the puck through the neutral zone. Their defensive game has been exceptional. And the club's actually sustained a high work rate, which, you know, again, you guys have been watching this hard hat version of Huska's Calgary Flames. So believe me when I say it, stringing together 4 max effort games in a row for this Canucks team, given what we've seen this season, was a welcome relief for those of us watching closely. So, what gives them the confidence? It's the way they play. It's the structure that they play with. It's their defensive game. It's the fact that when they're on their game, they actually do control play 5-on-5, and they certainly limit chances against. The raw offense isn't there, but they also give away nothing, right? They're able to sort of play one of those low oxygen, low event, frustrate your opponent. Their penalty kill is suddenly elite. and, you know, they can win these 2-1 games. And I think that's sort of the thesis here, is we can play Rick Tocchet hockey, and we can go into the playoffs playing a counterattacking game, using our speed to punish mistakes, and we can find ways to grind out enough wins to outlast Calgary and St. Louis and Utah. And I think they might be right. I mean, there's a chance that they can pull it off. What I think is a thinner bet is that Winnipeg's not going to see that approach and just absolutely pick it apart, right? Like that, where it's sort of where the rubber meets the road, and you kind of saw it in this game against the Dallas Stars on Sunday. Stars playing the second leg of a back-to-back. Canucks are kind of right in it. And then at the key moment, you know, Jason Robertson and some of their elite players just kind of took it over and in a couple of key moments made the difference in that game. And I struggle to imagine that Vancouver's counter-punching style right now, their reliance on defense in a league where scoring is increasingly important, right? A league where games are increasingly decided 4-3 as opposed to 3-2, right? And the Canucks are usually in 2-1 games, to be totally honest with you, gentlemen. I don't know that that's going to work against the elite right. teams, but does it give the Canucks enough of a floor to get in, to make the playoffs for the second consecutive year for the first time in a full 82-game season since 2012? Yeah, it gives them a shot. Huh. I think they'll have a floor here, but it's not been a lot of fun to watch. And, you know, I do think if Hughes can't, like if Hughes doesn't return and make an impact, if Demko doesn't return and make an impact, and if Pettersson can't find something more closely approximating, even his disappointing game from the fall, where at least the Canucks were controlling play in his minutes. Like if those three things don't sort of come up for the Canucks, I think they're going to be in for a slog, given sort of the knife fight dynamics in a crowded Western Conference playoff fight.
Last one for you. We're chatting with Thomas Drantz of The Athletic and Sportsnet 650 in Vancouver. Drantz, are the situation for Vancouver is back-to-back with travel. Flames will be a rested group. They haven't played since Saturday going into that game on Wednesday night. I'm from a Vancouver standpoint, if they're to have some semblance of success in these next six periods against Montreal and in the Flames game on Wednesday, what's going to need to happen for the Canucks?
Well, against the Habs, it's just about handling their speed, right? The Habs are like the only team I've seen all year that takes the puck out of the offensive zone at 5-on-5 to attack again with speed off the rush. If the Canucks can handle that, they'll have a shot. That's really what it comes down to. Speed has punished this Canucks team on occasion. The Habs did it themselves back in January, although, man, it wasn't that long ago, and yet it was a totally different team on the ice than the one the Canucks will ice tonight. And a lot of the players that the Canucks have added are strong skaters. So curious to see that sort of relief where we saw this opponent in sort of the final stages of the JT Miller era. And now maybe we'll get a chance to see them again in this sort of new transitional phase for the Canucks. As for the Flames, I mean, back-to-back games, pretty simple. Here's what matters in that game. The Canucks need to lead early, right? You need to score first. You need to lead going into the third. You don't want to be chasing a game tired, right? And so long as you can avoid chasing the game tired, you'll have a puncher's chance. If they're, you know, trailing or if it's neutral going into the third, I think that's pretty much ball game, right? It's a 40-minute game, really, on Wednesday. If the Flames lead after 40 minutes, the Canucks are going to be in very tough. And vice versa. If the Canucks lead after 40 minutes, they'll at least have a puncher's chance. Although, again, tired legs in the third period holding a lead, no guarantee. But it's necessary if the Canucks are going to grind out a regulation win and a four-point swing in this race.
Hey, great stuff, Drantzer. It's always a pleasure to chat with you, my friend. We'll be watching on Tuesday night and can't wait till Wednesday. Enjoy watching yourself, my friend. Thanks so much for doing this today, hey?
Yeah, my pleasure. And if you're a Flames fan watching the Montreal game tonight, just root for shots on goal, right? That's what you want to see. You want to see Montreal shots on goal. You'll be happy if you're a Flames fan.
That's right.
Enjoy.
That's right. Thanks, Drantzer. Thomas Drantz of The Athletic and Sportsnet 650 in Vancouver. That way, less of a chance the Flames see Lankinen on Wednesday and instead see Artturs Shelovs, which sure the Flames would love to see,
yeah.
Knowing how game one of the season went when they went up against Shelobs. That's Thomas Drantz of The Athletic and Sportsnet 650 on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline, serving the best pizza, pasta, steaks, and ribs for over half a century. Dine in at 6060 Memorial Drive Northeast or call 403-248-3344 for pickup or delivery. It's been a while, Wes, that a game's kind of felt like this important around the Flames. I mean,
yeah.
The last time I can remember it around this time of year, like not into late March, early April, but into the kind of second half of the season. Remember in 2022, they played two games against Colorado in a six-day span. I want to say one in Denver and one at the Dome. And that was two of the Avs won the Stanley Cup that year.
Right.
That was the Tkachuk, Johnny Lindholm year. And yeah. Darryl's first full season. And those were kind of like the two teams in the West that year. Edmonton obviously went to the West Final and beat the Flames in the playoffs. But at that time, Calgary and Colorado were the two teams in the West. And they played two epic games. Flames won a shootout game in Denver that was amazing. And then the Avs won 2-0, if I want to say. Nichushkin had both goals a few days later at the Dome. And I just remember coming away from both games saying, oh boy, those games felt like important ones. That's what it's a shame that Canucks are on the second half of back to back from like a actual gameplay standpoint, but from a Flame standpoint, they'll take that all day.
Sure.
They've had plenty of, you know, bad schedule games themselves this year, so they'll take the other team on a bad schedule. But I it does feel that way going into Wednesday night, doesn't it?
I know it's something that Ryan Huska pointed out today in his media avail, was just the sort of buzz around Calgary and how cool it is that this team has put themselves in a position to experience that. And I got to tell you, I'm excited about the game tomorrow. I think it's going to be a blast, and I hope this city gets to experience a bunch more big pressure, high stakes games down the stretch.
Which, I mean, they probably will. That'll start to wrap us up this hour on Flames Talk. Wes Gilbertson's on Twitter at Wes Gilbertson. Thanks to Cam Hughes, our outstanding producer this hour. And that'll do it for the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. Did you know that barrier-free access doors are required for commercial entrances and public washrooms? Are you compliant? Visit CalgaryLockAndSafe.com.